is the LA Local Morning Update, keeping you caught up with the latest from KNX News. Check back this afternoon for the LA Local's full daily briefing on what you need to know in SoCal.
With the winds, the dry air, these fires, tens of thousands of people without power this morning. Team coverage right here, starting with this mountain fire.
It is a scene that sadly we've just seen over and over in Southern California after these fires, the smoking rubble and what's left of a fireplace. The fire still raging as some homeowners wonder what they're going to do now that their home is gone. Mandatory evacuation still in effect. Thousands and thousands of acres burned. Our John Baird is live for us this morning in Camarillo Heights.
Yes, and there are a number of homes up here burned. We were told the total could be as many as 75 at this point. They don't have an accurate count yet. They're going to try to get it later on. But just to give you an idea, I'm on this winding road up through this neighborhood up here, these big homes. On the left side, the homes, for the most part, are untouched. On the right side, I have a bunch of burned homes. But sometimes it's kind of hopscotch. I was talking to a couple right in front of me here. Their home is fine. He is a Montebello firefighter who's been off on medical leave. He said they stuck around as long as they could yesterday to try to protect the home and came back, fortunately, to find it standing. But he also told me the home above him started to burn. He went to a hydrant to try to get water. The hydrant didn't work. He said if they had not cleared the brush between the two homes, he would have lost his home as well. But they were safe. They got out. They got their cat out. They come back today to see that this neighborhood, I mean, it's just eerie right now. The wind is blowing, and we got embers flying around, and it's smoky, and there's still little bits of fire here and there, and fire engines running up and down the roads. Also, sheriff's deputies or law enforcement officers are here as well, trying to keep things secure. They're checking all the houses. So there's still very much to do. This fire is 0% contained, and we've still got these winds to deal with all day long, and I think into tomorrow as well.
Yeah, let's talk about those winds. Thanks, John. Go to the Weather Channel now, meteorologist Ray Stajic. Ray?
All right, Mike. Yeah, and the high-resolution model showing a weakening of the winds in time. But what is that in time now? Most of the advisories for winds, whether it's the wind advisories, which actually go out to the coast in L.A. and Ventura counties, where we're getting winds 20 to maybe 30 miles per hour in some isolated areas and gusts, to the high wind warnings, they'll expire today. But that does not mean that the Weather Service may not put them back in place if they feel the winds will get stronger than currently forecast. But still, strongest winds in the warnings in the mountains and the highest elevations 50 to 60 with gusts today. Starting to see the winds come down elsewhere, maybe 20 to 30 miles per hour, even in and around the mountain fire. Although the winds have come down, we're still seeing gusts last hour to 20 to 30 miles per hour. And then we factor in the dry conditions and the red flag warnings. The PDS warning is very unusual, doesn't happen much. And that just means it's a particularly dangerous situation with low humidity and strong winds, fanning flames. We think that will continue through this morning and this afternoon, although the winds may back off a bit with each passing few hours. It's still going to be fairly windy. Less wind tomorrow and for Saturday, maybe even less, but a small chance of maybe trying to get some rain in here as we look ahead toward early next week. Vicki, Mike?
All right, thanks for that, Ray. Let's talk a little bit more about the winds and the impact it's had on other homeowners who've had their power cut. Edison has cut 69,000, nearly 70,000 customers. We get more live right now from our Craig Figner.
Yeah, Vicki, what I'm really taken by is the number of people who live in Calabasas, Camarillo, who really don't know the fate of their homes. They just know that yesterday they were told to get out as quickly as they could. Many of them haven't been back yet.
I got messages, though, about evacuating and that sort of thing, though.
Did you do that?
Yes.
How bad was the wind?
It was really bad. It started up yesterday at about 3 a.m. with big gusts of wind. Yeah.
She works in Los Angeles. Yesterday, as this windstorm kicked up, as fires were ignited, being driven by this intense wind, well, she got out of L.A., came up to Camarillo. She has a house here that's in danger of burning to the ground. At least that's what she was told yesterday.
I got messages, though, about evacuating and that sort of thing, though.
Did you do that?
Yes.
How bad was the wind?
It was really bad.
And she's like so many people this morning here in Camarillo. This morning, I drove up the 101 freeway north. You got to Lost Hills, the Pepperdine exit, and the entire area, both sides of the freeway, plunged into darkness because of the emergency power outages. It was downright creepy.
And after Piru, from there, at least to Santa Clarita, the power was out for the lights. along with the wind, and you could see the flames through Santa Paula and Fillmore up on the mountains coming down.
Yeah, it came on really quickly, and I just had to stay calm.
And your home's not in fire danger?
It is.
Do you know if it's still there?
I think it's still there, yeah. From what I could tell from the fire maps, it's still there.
Your cute little doggy there seems a bit unhappy.
They're protecting their mom.
Wow, just imagine not knowing if your home is still there. Well, there's no strong wind gust, at least where I am right now, Mike and Vicky, but the air is super dry, and there is word that power may not be restored until 9 o'clock tonight.
More on the fire with someone who was out all through the day yesterday, late into the night. Ventura County Fire Captain Tony McHale on the line with us now.
Captain, thank you for joining us.
You bet.
This fire has been so difficult, so challenging because of the winds and all of the people that needed to be evacuated. We've seen these scenes of just people in wheelchairs being taken out and the pets and the people. I mean, tell us a little bit about that, the rescues that you've had to do.
Yeah, this has been a confluence of a lot of critical factors here. The first one being, of course, the extreme fire weather that we had to deal with. I've been on the job for 30 years, and that was one of the heaviest Santa Ana wind events that I've seen. We had winds up to 60 to 70 miles an hour sustained, and sometimes gusts up to 80 in certain locations. So we were dealing with incredible fire conditions. One of the problems we had was it was casting. We call it fallout or ember cast, sometimes 2 miles away from the fire front. So that presented enormous challenges for the initial TAC crews that came in there. And then, of course, the intermix area that we're dealing with, we call it intermix, which means a mixture of wildland, agricultural areas, agricultural facilities, residences, and then, of course, whole neighborhoods like in the Camarillo Heights area. So this was a very dynamic, very fast-moving fire. So we had to adapt our tactics accordingly. Everything we do is based on conditions that are presented to us. So tactically, our priorities yesterday and through the night were life safety and structure defense. While, of course, we're opportunists, we look for those opportunities to engage the fire directly. But right now, the priority still is life safety and structure defense.
Captain, how are we with the winds today versus yesterday? And then tell us about the water. One of our reporters up there running into people where the hydrants have been dry.
Yes, as far as the winds, the winds are forecast today, but they're not going to be as intense as they were yesterday. But they're still dangerous. They're still a factor. So we'll have to see. They're supposed to subside at some point later this afternoon and early evening. With regard to the water supply issues, yeah, we have heard reports. We don't have any details on that yet. Of course, we'll look into it. But we were able to adapt as far as using water tenders and shuttling engines to deal with water supply challenges. But I don't have anything real specific or any specific causes as to what was going on with the water system. We're still investigating that to find out if there's any truth to that. So we'll get that out when we find out.
When people are evacuated because of a fire, they just want to know, is their home still standing and when can they go back? And I know it's a little bit early, of course, in the firefight. What is the strategy for today?
Yeah, so what happens is obviously the focus right now is suppression efforts. And then as conditions allow, as it becomes safer, we're going to send out damage assessment teams. They're going to go out to and do a very, very methodical, careful, and detailed investigation to get the number of homes that have been affected, either destroyed or damaged. That's a very painstaking, slow process. We want to make sure we get that right. As far as, the displacement, something like this, it happens so rapidly, so quickly. What we like to do here in Ventura County is to get the word out to our residents, and I know other counties do this as well. We have something called Ready, Set, Go. So people that live in wildland-prone areas should really be thinking about these kinds of things, and they should go to their websites to do the Ready, Set, Go, which is basically how to harden your house, pre-plan, and how to deal with an evacuation should that come. Also, we have the VC emergency site, which is very useful for people to get information on road closures, evacuation zones, shelters, even things like large animals for people that have to evacuate horses and cattle and other large animals, and also small animals. So those are good resources right there. But yeah, it's very disorienting. Something like this happens so quickly, the power can often go off, or you might have a public safety shutdown. Communications can be a challenge. So that's where we really encourage during east wind days for the residents to be vigilant, heads up, watch out for each other. get word out. And then, of course, you know, our law enforcement partners, the Ventura County Sheriff's Department and other law enforcement agencies are very good about going door to door and getting evacuation orders in place. But yeah, it was a very, yesterday was a very dynamic, intense day.
Ventura County Fire Captain Tony McHale, thanks for all you guys are doing out there. Briefing is set for 10 o'clock this morning, and we'll have info from that right here on KNX News.
President Biden is going to be speaking to the nation a little bit later this morning. Not too much later. We'll be carrying that live, and we'll have more coming up as 20 minutes of nonstop news continues.
What's going on with the interest rates? The Fed expected to cut the rates by a quarter percentage point today. CBS's Jill Schlesinger.
That would put the federal funds rate at a range of 4.5% to 4.75%. Now, this would follow the half of a percentage point cut that we saw in September.
There's a policymaking body at the Fed projecting rates will fall another half a percentage point by the end of the year, another percentage point over the course of next year.
A little bit more on President Biden addressing the nation at 8 o'clock this morning. That is the set time for that. And again, we'll carry that for you live. CBS News correspondent Matt Piper.
In a statement, President Biden says of Kamala Harris, quote, "She will continue to be a leader our children will look up to for generations to come as she puts her stamp on America's future." His Wednesday statement comes ahead of his address to the nation Thursday morning. He'll speak from the White House at 11 a.m. Eastern, his first appearance on camera since Harris was defeated by Donald Trump.
Democrats pointing fingers at who's to blame for the election loss. Several reasons being thrown around, including choosing Tim Walz as the VP candidate, failing to distance herself enough from Biden. We talked to Syracuse University political science professor Grant Reher. He tells us it would have been better for the Dems if Biden was the bridge candidate, like was once talked about.
He should have stuck to his original idea that he would only be a one-term president, and then the heirs to the nomination could have started jockeying much earlier, and one could have emerged.
Also says the party needs to move to the middle to court the rural and middle-class voters.
I think that returning to an earlier style of Democratic politics, perhaps going back even to a Bill Clinton style, might be finding more of the middle, finding more of the center may be the way for them to go.
He's saying the Dems shouldn't be emphasizing identity politics that hurt them with male voters.
Campaign reporter Jake Rosen says transition efforts are underway.
Trump's transition team includes businessman Howard Lutnick, former Trump administration cabinet official Linda McMahon, and Trump's two sons, Don and Eric. It's unclear specifically what they're hoping to do with people like Robert F. Kennedy and Tulsi Gabbard, who Trump has openly talked about for roles in his administration, in addition to specifically what role Elon Musk would have.
What role are we going to have here in California? The state officials are pushing back on Donald Trump.
Democratic political leaders have already signaled they'll use the courts to deal with policies that conflict with their views on immigration rights or reproductive freedoms. Republican strategist Tony Rosales views the reasons why those conflicts are already taking form.
With Trump in the White House, that gives Newsom a foil, a boogeyman, you know, someone to go after. And certainly allows him to kind of catapult himself back onto the national in the national spotlight and be the voice, the kind of the counter voice against Trump from the Democratic Party.
The opening shot may come at a 10 a.m. news conference with California Attorney General Rob Bonta in San Francisco, detailing what legal actions could be used to stall or invalidate actions by the future president on issues that are at the heart of the state's progressive mindset. I'm Pete Demetrio, KNX News, 97.1 FM.
The California Air Resources Board going to have this vote that could raise the gas prices. We've been talking about this off and on. The vote set for tomorrow, it's part of this transition away from fossil fuels, tougher restrictions, but restrictions can cost money, right? So what's going to happen? There was a warning of a 65-cent hike a while back, and that got people going, are you kidding me? We're live now with climate economist Danny Cullenward.
Hi, Danny. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
So the economy, you know, what people pay for things was a huge issue in the election, and it hurt the Democratic Party. Here we are in California talking about hiking the gas tax, or not the gas tax, but the cost of gas. What exactly will be the burden here and the benefit to the millions of drivers in California?
So I think it's hard to say what the burden is going to be. This is a complicated program, but it is clearly going to increase gasoline prices, the vote that's being taken tomorrow. It's a program that's designed to support so-called cleaner fuels to replace conventional fossil fuels. But unfortunately, this is really no longer a climate policy. This is a policy that primarily sends money to special interests that don't actually help with the climate scenario. And we're looking at cost impacts that could be significant. So today, cost impacts from this program are in the range of 8 to 10 cents per gallon. They could rise in the years ahead to something in the neighborhood of, say, 25 cents. By 2030, it could be as high as 30 or 34 cents if prices rise only modestly in this program. But the price numbers get a lot bigger if the credit prices in this program rise. And I think there's reason to be concerned that we could look at even higher gas price impacts by the 2030s.
Do they have to do this right now? I mean, it doesn't seem like they've decided to bout any of the pressure out there. Even some Democrats saying, hold on, let's get at least a better estimate of this before you go in and you know, pull the trigger on it.
I think one of the most striking things about this is you have, you know, basically most of the researchers who study this say a lot of these fuels don't actually help, and these costs could be significant. The regulator's position, although they used to be able to calculate costs for this program and did so for years, is that they no longer think it's possible to do that, and they're not providing any information ahead of this vote. There's no reason they have to do this tomorrow other than the political expediency of just trying to get it done, and I'm very concerned about the lack of transparency in this process.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit more about that, because Governor Newsom is behind this. It looks like the Air Resources Board is going to go ahead with this. How do they get away with this?
So I think this goes to a more fundamental problem right now in California climate policy, which is that we don't have a lot of accountability for the structures that we put in place. There's a lot of good programs and policies that are helping to cut emissions and to do so at reasonable rates. This is an example of a policy that's become captured by special interests. This is sending big money to big ag in the Midwest. It's sending monies to large dairies in California. And there are significant impacts. And this is a program basically that hasn't been subject to legislative oversight since its initiation more than a decade ago. And we need to stop sort of saying everything that looks like climate is good. This, frankly, isn't a really good climate policy. This is increasingly a special interest handout.
That's climate economist Danny Cullenward. Again, that vote is set for tomorrow.